Your world, your challenges, your faith. When faith within engages the world without, there's power. It's living life from the inside out.
We vilify it, and yet we can't seem to live without it. Social media has changed the way we live and make friends and even feel about ourselves. And this is having an impact on girls and young women. Welcome to Family Life's Inside Out. I'm Martha Manikas Foster, and today we're talking about the impact of social media, specifically on girls and young women. My guest for this conversation is author Sarah Ekoff-Zylstra, senior writer and Faith at Work editor for the Gospel Coalition. One of Sarah's 2022 podcasts is titled Scrolling Alone, How Instagram is Making a Generation of Girls Lonely, Anxious, and Sad. Welcome, Sarah, to Inside Out.
Martha, thank you so much for having me.
Oh, Sarah Ekoff-Zylstra, it is so good to have you on the other end of this conversation. So I have so many things I'd like to ask, but mostly I want to talk about this bleak title that you have, Scrolling Alone, How Instagram is Making a Generation of Girls Lonely, Anxious, and Sad. So what are the statistics about sadness and feelings of hopelessness among teen girls? And what made you look for a link between those feelings and social media use?
You know, it took me a while to get there, honestly. In 2021, I started working on a multi-author book. It's called Social Sanity in an Insta World. And the point of that was to try and give biblical wisdom to women who are using social media. Uh-huh. And toward the end of that project, some of the authors that I was working with said to me, you know what, we've missed an entire group of women here, which I didn't even realize until I started looking into it. And that was girls who are 25 and under, what uh-huh. we would call Gen Z.
Right.
They are having a completely different experience online. And the more I looked into it, the more I realized they were right. And so actually, Scrolling Alone is almost like a sequel to the book that explores a totally different experience in that younger generation. Uh-huh. I would say there's two big differences for them. One is that when I talk to women who are a little bit older, the biggest problem that they say they have with social media is the amount of time that it sucks out of their lives.
Sure.
And when I talk to girls who are under 25, none of them say that it sucks too much time out of their lives. They got nothing but time. But what they do say, they all say, far and away, it is body image. They are doing so much comparison of themselves to people on social image and the resulting like emotional and mental struggles that that produces in a young girl.
Mm.
So in 2009, we know about a third of American high school girls had persistent feelings of sadness or hopelessness. They just kind of felt bad a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. But by last year, so this is about 10 years later, mm-hmm. it was up to 57%, which is the highest recorded levels of teenage sadness ever. Mm. So almost doubled just in that amount of time. So once you look into this, like, good grief, 6 out of 10 teenage girls feel persistently sad or hopeless.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But when you look at the statistics, you can see that those feelings, they track right along with the rise of smartphones and social media. So it's a correlation, but it's not too hard to see those things tracking together and start to draw some conclusions.
Mm-hmm. What did you find, and how is social media shaping them and us?
Yeah. So the first thing you run into is how much time girls are spending online, which is about 5 hours a day just on social media.
Wow.
So if you think about, boy, if I spent 5 hours a day, you know, practicing basketball or making chocolate chip cookies or anything you would do for 5 hours, it would affect you. You'd get really good at it. You'd get opinions about it. It would change who you are. God made us like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so definitely we know that this is the amount of time that they're spending on here is shaping them. And here's how it does. First of all, it's really fun. Their mm-hmm. friends are there. They can mm-hmm. see what's happening. When they first get on, they feel like they're connecting. They feel good about it. And then over time, from talking to them, I know it doesn't feel as good. You start to compare yourself to other girls. And there are many ways you can do this. You compare your body, your mm-hmm. clothes, your grades, your summer job, your boyfriends, your friends, what you're doing on a Friday night. Every aspect of your life is up for comparison. And in some ways, like, God made us like that. You know, we were meant to affect each other, to live in community, to look and say, oh, look at the smart thing she's doing over here. Or like, mm-hmm. oh, look at how the way she loves Jesus over here. Like, we're meant to sharpen each other. The Bible calls that, right? Iron sharpening mm-hmm. iron, and like, you know, help each other along in this journey.
Mm-hmm.
But when you compare yourself to friends in real life, it's completely different than comparing yourself to your friends online, because there's something about being in real life with somebody that you know, that person, you love that person. Mm. You can legitimately rejoice and mourn with them. You can offer generosity. The embodiment of it just makes it more whole in some way.
Right. It's a 360 degree yes. view, right? It's the whole
yes.
person, right.
You
right.
know the whole person. And so if one good thing happens to them, you can see that in kind of in the context of their entire life. Mm. And I think that makes your rejoicing more legitimate. Mm-hmm. But when you're comparing with somebody online, you aren't with that person. And in fact, as social media has progressed, you're less and less likely to even know that person. They're
right.
probably an influencer of some kind. You maybe have never met that person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So there's no relationship that you're operating inside of. And because you don't know their whole story, that comparison gets wonky right away, right?
Sure.
I'm posting things that are good that have happened. And so maybe you're comparing yourself to me with my good things. But not only that, let's say you have 500 friends and let's say one or two of them get a really good internship when they're in college. And now you're comparing yourself not to all of those people,
right.
but just to the highlight reel of a couple of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then let's just say a couple of them get engaged to get married. And you're like, oh, I wish I was engaged to get married, but it feels like everybody else is and I'm feeling bad about myself.
Mm-hmm.
But you're just comparing yourself to the highlights of 500 people's one bright moment.
Mm-hmm.
But it feels to you like you should have all those bright moments. And so you just get tangled. You get tangled up and you can't get out of that.
And in a sense, you're saying you can't help but feel bad because,
mm-hmm.
because you're only seeing the best and you're only choosing to look at, in some ways, the best of the best. This day it might be this friend of those 500, and this day it might be this person you have also a friendship with online. It's not necessarily that all of them are having wonderful days every day, but among them, there are a bunch of wonderful days, even if those are, we're assuming those are true.
Exactly right.
Right.
You're exactly right on all those points. So they're taking the best snapshot of their best day. And if you have 500 friends, every day somebody's having a
mm-hmm.
good day somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But you're constantly feeling like my day never measures up.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you know this in your head, which we do. And when you talk to teen girls, they know, right? They're not dumb. They know it in our head. But it's hard to make that connection to your emotions when your body just does that when you look online. It just makes that comparison and you feel like that.
Right. And it's a high percentage of the waking hours that you're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Sarah, allow me to reset for those just joining us. You're listening to Inside Out on Family Life. I'm talking today with Sarah Ekoff-Zylstra about her 2022 podcast. It's titled Scrolling Alone, How Instagram is Making a Generation of Girls Lonely, Anxious, and Sad. Sarah, you point out that even daughters in families whose parents limited their access to social media, they still suffer the downsides of social media. And those feelings included feeling that they failed by comparison, like we've been talking about, or they feel compelled to develop their own personal brand and then always post accordingly, make sure they're taking photographs and posting them, even though that might not be what they want to be doing, but that would be consistent with their brand. And so many more things. What's the answer for the parent in the situation?
So I'm a little nervous to answer this because mm-hmm. I have sons. I don't have daughters.
Mm-hmm.
And my sons are not on social media. But Martha, there's no social consequence for them. For boys, it doesn't matter as much. Like boys, they just text with their friends and they come over and play ball or whatever. But it's just different for girls. But I'm going to answer anyway, but just keep that in mind.
Okay.
I don't have daughters. I would say to parents that every minute you can keep your child off social media is another minute that they are able to develop in a healthy way. So listen to this and listen to the ages here, especially. I'm going to give you some statistics.
Okay.
In the last 10 years, self-poisonings among 10 to 12-year-old girls quadrupled.
Wow.
Hospital admissions for self-harm tripled among 10 to 14-year-old girls. Major depressive episodes among 12 to 17-year-old girls increased 52%.
Mm-hmm.
Emergency room visits for suicidal ideation and attempts nearly doubled among children and adolescents. And suicide among 10 to 14-year-old girls doubled.
My.
So there's a lot of 10 to 14 in that list that mm-hmm. I just gave you. I cannot envision a scenario in which a child under 14 should be allowed to access social media just from, I mean, the statistics are just laying right out there in front
mm-hmm.
of us. And we know this. If you think back to when you were in those junior high and high school years, right, it's not hard to imagine everything that you feel as an adult. They're feeling that so much deeper. Mm-hmm. The comparisons at that level are so much stronger. They're so much more insecure in who they are. They don't have the length of wisdom. They don't have sort of the adult perspective on things. And so to give them a tool like this is just, it's dangerous. Mm-hmm. I hope that's not an exaggeration. So if I had a daughter, I would keep her away as long as I could. Mm-hmm. Not because I don't want her to have friends, but because I do want her to have friends, right?
Right.
Because I want her to have friends over to make cookies and go to a game and have a bonfire in the backyard and mm-hmm. go for a road trip and have a sleepover. I want her life full of good, real, in-person friendships. So if I had daughters, you know, that's a dangerous thing to say, but if I did, mm-hmm. if I had daughters, I would just really want to lean into the goodness that there is for her and focus on that instead of the, you know, taking away something that she would like.
Mm. So we're talking about a situation where what you're telling your child they cannot have, what she cannot have, is going to become all that much more attractive, right? Because it's forbidden. So mm-hmm. yeah, it'd be interesting sometime, you know, to have a conversation about what are some of those strategies that have been successful for parents, because I can't even imagine those conversations. We're talking about very young people. Their amygdalas are not totally formed, and this is so influential. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, I mean, I think we can agree that social media is entwined with youth culture. I mean, it's not going away, so we need strategies to work with it being part of the ethos, a part of the air. How do you think it could be used well for the kingdom of God and for people aiming to use social media to reach others for God? What can they do, or what can they rely on to keep them from being crushed by the negative impacts? What would you recommend after having talked to so many girls?
Yeah, this is a great question. And I think you're absolutely right, because we know God uses social media. It's not like God can't do anything on social media. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. He is there and he is working. But here's what I think, just from looking at the numbers, because we can't plead ignorance. There's been so much research that has been done, and I think it's more and more seeping into the consciousness of everyday people. Like, there's something not entirely all on, you know, above board with our social media use. So here's what I think. If you're going to use it, if you're thinking, I want to use this well, I want to use this maybe as a mission field or a way to bring glory to God, then do it right. Study it. Know what you're walking into. Read books about it or articles about it. Think about it well. Talk to wise people about it, especially find people that you think are doing online ministry well or mm-hmm. have a really good online presence and mm-hmm. imitate them. Mm-hmm. Listen to the stories of those who have been influenced toward the gospel through social media and see what was effective.
Right.
So for example, we know social media is a great way to announce a Bible study or a youth group event. It's a really good way to, like, it's like a, you know, public bulletin board that you mm-hmm. can put your events up on there.
Sure.
But we know it's not a great way to disciple somebody. We know it's not a great way to mentor somebody. That's mm-hmm. much better in an in-person coffee conversation. Mm-hmm. Also, from the stories that I hear, people who come to faith from unbelief almost all come through YouTube and TikTok. There's something about those mediums. I don't know if it's the video aspect or something about those algorithms, but I don't hear anybody coming from unbelief to faith through like Instagram or Facebook. However, I do hear of people whose faith is strengthened or who come across really good doctrine or whose faith grows by influences on Instagram and Facebook. So when you're walking in, like, just think, like, what is it that I want to do here? Do I want to encourage my friends? Do I want to reach somebody new for mm-hmm. the gospel? And kind of learn enough about it so that you're not being ineffective.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then you asked them, like, how not to be crushed. And this is, I got two things to say about that.
All right.
One is pray about it. So nobody goes to the mission field without a call from God, right? I mean, I pray about where we send our kids to school. You pray about where you go to church. You pray uh-huh. about your job. If you're spending, and the average American spends 2 hours a day on social media, then that is worth praying about. Lord, mm-hmm. should I be here? Is this where you want me? Which platform do you want me on? What are the interactions that you would like me to have today? I feel like we don't pray enough or ask for God's leading in our social media use. It sort of feels negligible or like no big deal
sure.
or like, you know, but it's not. It's a huge deal. It's affecting us immensely. So the first thing I would say is pray about it. And the second thing I would say, and this also applies to mission work, is you don't go alone.
Mm-hmm.
You go with your family or with your friends. You go with prayer support. You go with a church family that's sending you, right? So when you go online, make sure you also have so many friends in real life. Your online life should just be a spillover. It shouldn't be your main social life. It should be like maybe a little extra where once in a while you post a picture of what you did in your real life.
Mm.
And also share your social media password with your spouse. Know your kids' passwords. Look online together. Talk about what you're posting and when you're posting and why you're posting. The best way that we can keep ourselves from the darkness, and social media lends itself to so much darkness, right? To hiding, to aloneness, to mm-hmm. being by yourself. So if you're going to go into that darkness, go in with the light, go in with that prayer, and go in like opening it up as much as you can for your family to hold you accountable. And then I think you'll have a better shot at a healthy relationship there.
Mm, that's so much wisdom really compacted there. Wow. So some of your points are like the best might be a hybrid use. You're using social media for some parts of relationship and some parts of evangelism and discipleship, but not all of it, that there's still a significant in-person component to what you're trying to do as ministry. Know the strengths of the different platforms and social media mm-hmm. in general, and know its weaknesses. Go in with prayer and also have other people praying for you. And then also accountability comes with that prayer. If I say, I'd like you mm-hmm. to be praying for me as well as me praying for this ministry, give those people the permission to say, how is it going? You know, are you mm-hmm. feeling like you're still in control of this? Or honestly, do you feel like it's getting some control over you? Wow. What you've said, I'll definitely be going over and over in my head. That's really thanks. Great. Really great. Thank you. Thank you for your wisdom. Thanks for the research. And thanks for joining me right now for this conversation on Inside Out.
Hey, thank you so much for having this conversation with me. I think it's been really fruitful. So thank you.
Me too. My guest has been author Sarah Ekov-Zylstra. You can find out more about Sarah by going to thegospelcoalition.org. That's one word, thegospelcoalition.org. I'm Martha Manikas-Foster with Inside Out on Family Life.